The biggest transition is rather than driving, you have to motivate. And that's the true trait of a leader who can motivate rather than drive. Because if you want your firm, you'll constrain the growth of your firm if you're driving it. But if you're motivating and inspiring, then you're going to have a firm that continues to grow.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
Today, I'm excited to be joined by my good friend, Milo Reverso, someone I've known and respected for many years. Hey, Milo, how are you?
Very good. And it's a pleasure to be here with you, Eric.
I'm really, really excited that we got an opportunity to do this together. And I think you might know this, but typically we always like to start with good news and gratitude. Do you have any good news or gratitude you'd like to share?
You know, I will tell you right now, it's kind of family oriented. I have a daughter getting married in October and the son getting married in January. And I'm looking forward to two more people joining our family. And I've just been concentrating on that recently and being very thankful for that.
That is amazing news. I did not know that. So you must be, I can see it on your face. You're smiling ear to ear here.
Absolutely. It's all good.
I know how much you love your family. And, you know, interesting, your family, kind of like my family, not exactly, but you have siblings in the industry too. And I found that out in roundabout ways. You know, I just didn't even know until I came across them either on a project or through some pursuits. And so it's very nice. I know how important family is to you. So that's great to hear. Congrats to you. Congrats to the kids there. That's exciting.
Thank you.
You know what? Like-minded, then my gratitude today or my good news is my wife is pregnant with our second baby, and we're just very excited for that. So also very family focused, and I love to share good news like that. That's great.
Well, judging from that first baby, you're blessed, and you're very blessed, and you're going to have a second one. I hope all goes well.
Yeah, fingers crossed. We are very scared, but also very excited. Those are the only two emotions I can think of.
Nothing to get scared of. Once you have the first two, the next two will be very easy.
Pretty easy, yeah. Next two. I'm going to tell Michelle you said that. We'll see what she says. All right, great. Well, with that, tell us about your background. Where'd you grow up? Where did you go to school? How did you get into this crazy industry? Tell us about yourself.
Oh, wow. I grew up in Scarsdale. I've lived on the same block for 64 years now. My dad's house is right next door. He's passed, but I grew up in that house. And when I got married, I bought this house and raised my family in this house. I joined the industry very early on. Dad put me to work in his office buildings at the age of about 7 years old. I worked in many different crafts and absolutely participated in the Bricklayers Union for a couple of summers also. But as apprentice electrician, apprentice plumber, and things of that nature. Mom was a teacher, and she believed that, you know, you could lag her too long in school. So she kind of pushed us, all her kids, all along. There were seven of us. And I graduated high school at the age of 16. I did high school in 3 years, and I entered general schooling 1 year early. So that put me 2 years in advance. And then I graduated Manhattan College in engineering, where Dad and my six brothers and sisters went. And I got a degree in engineering at the age of 20. I went out to Purdue University and got my master's at 21 and my doctorate at 24. Came back to New York City, started with a construction manager. The biggest one in New York at the time was Tishman Construction. Worked with them for 10 or 11 years, then went to work with an interiors contracting outfit. Then made a move over to as a public client as the New York City School of Construction Authority, where I became president and CEO. And from there, I came back into the industry for a general contractor, General Jones and Morse Diesel, and ended up at STV, a design firm, and was there for 15 or so years. And then retired from there and ended up going to work at my alma mater as president of a Manhattan college, which I turned into Manhattan University. So the industry has been, I feel blessed. My life I lived has been very fulfilling, and the industry has been very, very good to me. I enjoy it. It constantly throws down new challenges, and I enjoy new challenges and learning new things.
Well, I will start with what you said at the end there, and I will speak for the industry, and I think this is well known. But, you know, as much as the industry has blessed you, I think you've also blessed the industry. And there's probably a good 1,000+ folks out there that in some way, shape, or form, probably more, way more, but touched by, you know, you and your impact both at STV and at Manhattan University. And I know that to be true because many of them I currently know and speak very highly of you and talk about the impact you had on them in their careers. So thank you for that and all that you do there. And
thank you, Eric.
You know, now I'm going to go back to what you started with, and I did not know was that you worked like as an apprentice or in any of the trades. We had never talked about that before. Tell us a little bit about that. So those were those mostly just summer internships or summer roles, or were any of them longer than others? Like, were you actually a card holding member of a union, or?
I was a card holding member of the bricklayers union.
Wow.
For two summers. That was a summer engagement. My father was an engineer, and he was a general contractor, and then he became a developer. He built several strip malls and office buildings, and I will tell you, I did a lot of construction demolition work for tenants and for him in those buildings. So that's where I kind of learned a lot of the trades.
And so I'm going to just like, you know, I found that so interesting. I really did not know that about your background. How much do you think that helped guide you in what you ended up doing, either as a construction manager or even on the owner side, or and then as you moved on to STV?
Oh, I found it tremendously valuable. One, when you're sitting in a classroom and learning, it allows you to apply things that you saw in the field as you were growing up and apply it to what you were learning and vice versa. When I came out of college, a lot of people said, oh, he has a PhD. What will he know about construction and things like that? And when I walked the job, I knew a lot about construction at the time because I had done it since I was 7. And I did it every day. It wasn't just summers. It was every day after school. I even did custodial work in the office buildings after school. And I hired a lot of my friends in high school and grammar school during those periods to work with me. And you learn leadership skills. You know, my father once put me on a bricklaying job, and he said, you know, you're not there to make the money. That's not why I'm putting you there. I'm putting you there so you look at how the superintendent talks to the foreman. How does the foreman talk to the men? How do they lay out the job? How does a general contractor work with the subcontractors? How does the brick contractor work with the electrical contractor? He said, that's stuff that you'll never learn in a classroom, and it'll make you more powerful when you go into the industry. And he was 100% correct.
My dad was very similar with us coming into the industry. It was, you know, you got to be out on the site. You got to listen to what everyone's talking about. Try to absorb as much as you can. So I think it's great advice. And I'm really glad you shared that. The other thing I found out there that I didn't know was that you had 6 siblings. I didn't know that. I mean, 2 of them I know. For some reason, I thought there was 4 of you in total, but I guess there's 7. And I did not realize that. So that's cool. Having a big family. I love that. Did they all work those summers with you, and were they all helping out with demo, or were you really alone taking charge?
Sometimes they worked with me, and sometimes, a lot of times, I was alone. So, and the girls did work in construction trade. So there were 3 girls, and that's not a sexist remark, but I'm talking now the 60s and 70s. So generally, they weren't working in the construction trade. Although I won't say that exclusively, because when I was under the gun and we had to get jobs done, a couple of my sisters picked up a paintbrush to help the finishing touches on the office fit out.
I love that story. Your dad, you, your 6 siblings, just like hard at work. I love it. It's amazing. And then towards the end there, you were talking about your role in Manhattan, you know, university. And I know how much you care and just love Manhattan University. And so that's like a big change, right? And it's not a change you hear of in this industry. So I wanted to ask you about that. Like, going from your role at STV to Manhattan University, what did you think were the biggest challenges, and what ended up being the biggest challenge in that transition or change?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, if you look at my career path, I have changed gears several times. When you're going from a construction management to a public owner, there's a whole new set of metrics, circumstances, politics, administrative requirements. Then moving from a public owner to a design firm. Design firms are very different than the big construction managers. And there's a whole new set of metrics, clients, what's important. And you transition. That first year of a new engagement, going into a new type of industry, and even that transition into Manhattan, it's your learning. You're in a constant learn mode. If a normal person works 50 hours a week, you're going to work 150 hours a week because you have to learn everything new about that business. I knew Manhattan University because I had gone to school there. I've always participated in alumni activities to further the school for the past 30, 40 years. And I was on the board for the last 8 years.
Yep.
So I knew the challenges facing higher education. And I knew the financial challenges because the enrollment in our universities and colleges aren't what it used to be. The cost of going to higher education has gotten very challenging, and some people don't see the value added by a college education. So, and that's all taking tolls on the finances of our colleges and universities throughout the United States. So I knew the challenges, but I won't tell you I knew a lot. I went in there and I learned, and I worked long hours. Everybody knows I have a tremendous work ethic. And you learn the culture of the place because, you know, trying to move culture is like moving a huge barge in the ocean. You know, you keep adding tugboats and you begin to change direction. And the more tugboats you add and the more directional change you get, it begins to pick up momentum. But if you go too fast, you could crack that tugboat in the middle of the ocean. So you're doing things like that. You're making changes, things the people there may not be used to, and they have to adapt. And you have to throttle as you see fit to cause the change, but not break the barge.
It's a great analogy. It's very interesting. And I know you're talking about your tenure at Manhattan University there, but I'm sure that applied at other points of your career too, right? Like at STV, if you're making a big change across a, you know, a company of thousands of people, you know, across the entire country, I'm sure there were similar challenges, right? Where you're trying to throttle back or figure out when is it time to push, when is it time to stay the course, right? Keep the tugboat moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I would say it's the same no matter where you go. Change management is difficult. It takes a lot of work and long hours and a lot of communication. But I will tell you, throughout the common themes throughout all the businesses, whether it was construction, whether it was public owner, whether it was design, is you have clients and you have employees. And you take care of your clients and you take care of your employees and you will be successful. But you have to take care of your clients and you have to take care of your employees.
It's funny, we break down our mission and our vision into two simple concepts. And what they are is we want to be the employer of choice. So like you said, right, we want to be a good place for people to work, that they feel they can build their careers and really are part of something. And we want to be the service provider of choice. We want clients to feel that we can be counted on, we can be trusted, and we're going to deliver the right work product. So very in line with what you just said. I completely agree with those two things being instrumental to success, right? So I want to touch on again, like the experience you have there as both on the education side, right? And you alluded to, like, you knew the challenges that higher education was having going into the role, and that's still a prevalent challenge. How is that current state of higher education impacting our industry, do you think?
Well, I think it is impacting the industry, and there's a lot of challenges. And the only way our industry will benefit and the colleges and higher education institutions will survive is there has to be a deep collaboration between the industry and the educational institutions. They have to collaborate and they have to figure out what's important. And that has to be done at a very high level. If you get the wrong people in the room, like project managers and the project engineers, if they're too low, or a division manager or district manager, then they're going to express certain things that they're looking for employees in the employees that are very different than what the CEO may understand what he's looking for in employees. You have to have that wide scope of running the organization and getting those CEOs in the room and getting that input on the curriculum to the professors and the deans and the chair people in the college. You know, in engineering, I'll get a take for example, because that's where I spent my life. You spend 2 years learning the sciences, you know, calculus, chemistry, physics. They don't understand why you're studying that as a student, but you have to learn the pure sciences. And then engineering is an applied science. And where the challenge is today is going from the applied science of engineering to applied engineering technology. So, you know, a district manager or a profit center manager, if working for a big firm, is interested in these employees coming out. They want them to know BIM. They want them to, you know, they wish they knew CAD. They want them to know CPM scheduling and the softwares that track scheduling and submittals and things of that nature. A CEO necessarily won't have the same interests. They want people to understand the engineering principles, and they want them to be able to write those programs that are going to do applied engineering, whether it's Strudel or, you know, to date myself, for a structural program or you know, BIM modeling in CAD. A lot of times the CEOs will understand we can teach that to them in the firms. We need them to understand L over R ratios and the modulus of elasticity and concrete codes and steel codes. And then artificial intelligence enters the screen. And that makes it even more challenging. And it's challenging for the firms to figure out how they're going to apply artificial intelligence in their firms. So they're not 100% sure right now of how that's going to apply. The professional engineering licensing doesn't really allow for the application of artificial intelligence because you have to perform the calculations yourself and things of that nature. So everything has to begin, even the legal profession has to adapt for the ethics involved in artificial intelligence. And the professors have to adapt that the students are beginning to use artificial intelligence to solve their problems.
Yeah.
So, you know, I once told a professor, well, I think the challenge would be to give them a problem where artificial intelligence might come up with the wrong answer and have them pick out that wrong answer. Because essentially, that's what they're going to have to do in the industry. But all these are very moving pieces that are complicating education going forward. Keeping professors up to date with this type of technology and that mindset is very difficult if they don't have a good relationship with industry. And how to foster that and bring in practitioners from industry to teach, which a lot of colleges and universities are doing, especially at the master's level, bringing practitioners in to teach. I had two sons that went through Manhattan University's construction management program in the last year or two. And they said that one of the real strengths was the practitioners that came in to teach at the courses and the real world examples that were given. That's a real added benefit.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.
I can vouch for that. We took principles of construction class. I mean, we took many classes, obviously, but during my engineering undergrad, and that was done by industry professionals who came in and they would show us real projects and how they really solved these problems. And it was different than a lot of the other coursework we took, right? Where it was very theoretical or, you know, in a textbook or education, right? Traditional classwork. I love that the practitioners are getting involved. I also liked what you said about kind of reaching out to industry to set the curriculum, which was something I didn't know was happening, but is really probably the best way to do it to make sure there's no disconnect between what's needed and what's out there and what the students are learning. I do want to touch on the AI point because I actually was reading about this recently. And another point you made earlier, which was around like, hey, during the engineering program, right? And I did the same thing. We take a bunch of different sciences. We take, you know, like hard math and calculus and whatever, I don't even remember anymore, Diffie Q and all the crazy, crazy classes that I somehow passed at some point in my life. But what those really taught us, it wasn't necessarily about the skill or the material, you know, as much as, to me at least, it was about the critical thinking ability. I could receive a problem, I could analyze the information I'm provided, and I could create a relatively strong solution to it, you know, with whatever understanding I had of all of what's in front of me. And I think that is the greatest challenge that AI presents, is a generation that loses their ability to critically think and just takes for granted what it spits out. And recently there's been a lot of talk because ChatGPT came out with their new model, and it's not very good at math, right? You give it simple mathematical equations and it just does not know how to compute it. And you know, if it's someone that has critical thinking skills, they can identify that as a problem, right? It's very similar to if, you know, when we're running like engineering calcs, you know, if something is off, right? You might not know what the exact number should be, but you will know that, you know, this can't be five times the magnitude of what went into it. You know, it just doesn't make sense. And I know that. But if you don't have the ability to critically think and analyze and distinguish that, it's a problem because you're just trusting whatever output you got, and that's reality. So I love AI as a tool, and I do use it, and we're trying to encourage it to be used more, but there's a time and a place. And I think for students, it's really important to develop those critical thinking skills and the ability to identify what makes sense and what doesn't make sense in the context of the, you know, the world that you're going to be entering, like especially engineering, where the numbers should make sense, and you can figure that out pretty easily.
You're spot on. The engineering education teaches you how to take big problems, break them down into small problems, solve them, reassemble the answers into a big solution, and it teaches you how to think. Yes, you learn a lot of technical things of how to design an I-beam, how to design a concrete beam, but you are being taught how to think and how to solve problems. And that is something that the computers can't replace for you.
So I know you've been a leader for a lot of your career, right? And it shows here, and you know, your roles at STV, your role with the SCA, your role at Manhattan University. Can you share, like, is there a personal story that shaped your leadership philosophy, or is there, you know, some guiding principles you have? I just want to hear about your take on leadership.
Well, you know, I try to set by example the work ethic, and I have a very tough work ethic. I'm known to be very demanding, but fair. And you have to be fair in the end as a leader. For me, I was a tremendous manager growing up. And the biggest transition is, rather than driving, you have to motivate. And that's the true trait of a leader, who can motivate rather than drive. Because if you want your firm, you'll constrain the growth of your firm if you're driving it. But if you're motivating and inspiring, then you're going to have a firm that continues to grow. So there's a lot of things. You need to mentor, recognize talent, reward, visit clients. There's a lot of parts to being a leader. One of the best training grants, and my recommendation to the youth who come into our industry, is join the professional associations. Join them, but just don't join them to put them on your resume that I belong to this association or that association. I used to say, I'll only pay for your membership fees if you volunteer to be on a subcommittee, if you try to become a leader of that subcommittee, if you try to move from the leadership of that subcommittee into the leadership of the chapter, and then if you move from the leadership of the chapter into the leadership of the national organization. To me, it was free leadership training. And you can learn a lot of all of the values and beliefs of a good leader and apply it in those circumstances. And if you can lead the subcommittee, all members from different companies and organizations working on one aspect of that organization, then you can move into leadership within a company. So I always recommend to young up-and-comers to volunteer and get involved in the professional associations.
It's great advice. I try to be involved and I love giving back, but it's one of those situations where, you know, whatever you put in, you feel like you get 10 times back, right? And to your point about learning from other leaders and hearing from, you know, other parts of the country too, right? Very often in construction, we get isolated to like to our job sites, really, even, you know, it doesn't, especially earlier in our career when that's all we're working on, right? We have one project and we're fixated on it. And you get exposure through some of these organizations like CMAA, right? And Milo is a fellow, and that's a great honor. And so that's, you know, I just wanted to bring some recognition to that. And also a member of the National Academy of Construction, another like great honor. But as, you know, an earlier career professional, you join these organizations and you start to learn and see and hear more and more. You observe and you get the ability to then, you know, kind of also navigate your career path, right? You see more opportunities, you see what the world is really like out there. Whereas if your head's down on one project, which can happen for years, that's all you see day in and day out, and you don't get the opportunity to grow. That's a very interesting caveat you have there, that you pay for membership if they're part of a subcommittee. I may consider that. That may have to be a rule we implement. I like that.
And you learn leadership qualities from everybody you meet. You know, I had one president of a company. I wasn't getting along with the first boss I had when I first came out of college. And later, 5 years later or something, I saw him one day and we were talking. And I said, why did you keep that one person? And he said, Milo, when you're running a company with 2,500 people, it's your job as a CEO to find the spot where that person will contribute the most to your company. And you can find a lot of different spots in a company our size. And the same thing, you can find a spot which will help develop the person. So it's your job not to just to find people that you think will do well, but to find people and then give them the assignments that they'll maximize their productivity for the company and for their personal development. That's a leadership lesson. I could talk about every person I worked for and tell you what I walked away learning from that person throughout my career. You pick it up from my father, from my grandfather. I was having a tough time on a homework assignment and I was complaining and I was going up the stairs of my house. And my grandpa lived up the block, so he was always at our house. And my grandpa only had a third grade education. And he was in construction. He was a superintendent. And I was pounding the steps on the way up. And he said, what's the matter? And he said, I was in like third grade. I said, homework, homework, homework. I'm tired of doing homework. And he looked at me and said, you're going to have to do a lot of homework before you stop doing homework. Just take it one step at a time, one problem at a time, solve it, and then go forward. Life is full of little lessons, and they all go to make the person.
What a great story. And I think it's amazing. I was having a conversation with someone earlier today. The impacts that people can have on your life without knowing it. Like you told that story so affectionately, and clearly your grandfather was someone that had a good positive impact on your life. And in that moment, he probably said that and didn't even think twice about it, you know. But to you, it stayed with you your whole life. And so the conversation I was having earlier today was very similar, was like something I say to my daughter as she goes to school every day and she's 2.5. She doesn't know what I'm saying. But I say we love to learn and learn something new, right? Because I really think that's important. And the reason I do that is because growing up, my dad would say crazy things like that to me. And at the time, I'm like, what is he talking about? But today, it resonates with me, you know, like just so much small advice that he probably didn't even realize he was giving or thinking about. And at the time, we thought he was crazy, right? Me, my brother, my sister were like, what's he talking about all the time? But it really, really comes out. And so I guess that's just like a long way to say, you know, everybody, and mostly to the listeners, make an impact on people, even if you don't realize it. So, you know, always be willing to share and give in that positivity, because you don't know who's listening and what they're listening to and what will stay in their mind for the next 20, 30, 50 years. But, you know, you hope it's good advice. So you want that to be true.
Well, you learn from good events and you learn from bad events. Some leaders, you learn what you don't want to do when you're a leader. So, you know, you got to turn even negative situations into positives. So.
Great point. Just talking about like advice and leadership and, you know, making sure people in the right seats. One of the things that the industry is really challenged by right now is attracting younger people, right? And I was just curious, you have any advice? I mean, you've been on both sides of this, right? I'm sure you were doing some work with STV on this, right? How do we bring in more young talent and make sure they're promoted? And then I'm sure you were doing work with the university at that same idea, right? Well, how do we get more students involved in on the engineering side and then into careers? Do you have any advice to the industry? Like, what should we be doing to kind of attract more younger talent and get people interested and excited about what we do?
The industry needs to attract more talent into the engineering and architecture and construction management schools. Right now, I think the industry needs stronger branding. They need to improve industry recognition. You go into an elementary school or a high school and you speak to those students, and they don't know what a plumbing engineer does. They get up in the morning, they turn the water on their faucet, they turn the shower on. They never knew that a plumbing engineer was involved. They never know that there have to be pipes and water treatment plants and pumps to get the water pressure into their house, and or a PRV to lower the water pressure in their house. They don't know about, you know, electrical systems and how the power generation, the distribution, and the, into the house. So the industry is missing that. They come out of high school knowing that Wall Street makes a ton of money for people. They all want to be financed because they're going to get $1 million bonuses on Wall Street. But they don't come out of school knowing what our profession does. So our industry needs stronger branding and a stronger outreach into the youth of the country. And, you know, the ACE Mentor Program, which I'm very active in, is one of those programs that was designed to do that, to explain to them what we do, to make it attractive to them, and then to encourage them to pursue college educational careers in architecture, construction, and engineering. So we have to continue to do that. You know, a parent hears that somebody died in a trench collapse. You know, what a perception that parent has when the son says, I want to go into engineering or construction. No, it's too dangerous. I went to a career fair, or it's called Engineering Expo in White Plains, and I heard a mother ask a child, a high school child, what do you want to do? And there were probably 500 tables set up there. And he said, I want to be a chemical engineer. And the mother, I could hear her whispering to the child, oh, you don't want to do that. The chemicals are bad. You're going to get contaminated and things like that. That's a bad perception that we need to take to the public and explain it all. Construction, yes, risk. But the improvements that have been made in the field for safety in construction over the last 10, 15 years is absolutely tremendous. And we got to get public recognition for that. But, you know, every accident that happens, it'll end up on the front of a newspaper, and it gives our industry a bad reputation.
Great perspective. One, shout out to ACE. Great program. If you can support it, please support it. We do. I know, Milo, you're very involved, and I think they do great work. Same line. Salvadori goes into, you know, young into K through 12 schools and promotes engineering architecture. So shout out to Salvadori. But I agree with you. It's about getting more exposure to it. Because even me going into college, I mean, what did I hear? I knew about the industry because of my dad, but my guidance counselor was like, well, you're good at math, you're good at science, you might want to check out engineering. But there was no like real push as to what that meant. And I do think we need to do a better job of that at all levels of education. And I think I said this in a prior episode, but like, even in pop culture, right? Like, on TV, you see people being doctors and you see people being attorneys and you see people having many careers, but rarely do you see, you know, I think it's Art Vandelay from Seinfeld. I think someone told me that I guess I never watched the Brady Bunch, but the father from Brady Bunch, maybe he was an engineer. Is that correct?
I think it was an engineer or an architect. I forget.
No, someone mentioned that to me. And then my wife and I, we like to watch a lot of funny, like, sitcoms, I guess, but How I Met Your Mother's one of them. And he's an architect and then the main actor, but you know, there's not a lot of exposure and the kids don't see that or hear about it. So it's, you know, and you're right about Wall Street and the money or, you know, these tech companies. We lose a lot of talent to tech companies right now.
But the real attractive thing for our industry is just look at what we build.
Right.
Look at the museums. Look at the bridges. When you're going across the Cuomo Bridge, it just absorbs everything that went into designing that. I mean, and if you point it out to the children and the public, how beautiful it is and, you know, how we solved a problem. I mean, that bridge was falling into the water, literally. and how it got solved and the water network. I mean, it's a, if you ever heard a lecture, a 2-3 hour lecture, there was a gentleman named Joel Mealy, and he ran DEP for a while, and he gave a 2-3 hour lecture on the history of the New York City water reservoir system and all the pipelines coming down into the city to supply the water from the Catskills and the gravity of it. And it's unbelievable. That should be what attracts people into our industry.
I totally agree with you. You know, you made a point earlier, you turn the lights on, you take that for granted. You turn the faucet on, you take that for granted. But there are some very dedicated, intelligent, hardworking people that make that all happen every single day so easily and effortlessly. And I love the projects we build. You know, I love that we get to touch them, to use them, to work inside of them, to work on them. We got to do more. We got to get just.
So you walk around New York City and just look at all the beautiful buildings that are going up. And, you know, not all of them turn out so beautiful, but most of them do. And they're pieces of art to look at them. And that should be inspiring for people to participate in it.
I completely agree. Well, that was so much great information. I really appreciate you sharing that. I do want to jump into our lightning round. So this is going to be some quick fire, fun questions, you know, answer first thing that comes to mind. So my first one, and I don't know if you're going to have one or not, but is, do you have a favorite game?
Monopoly.
Yeah?
I used to beat all my siblings and my kids won't play me.
So this is not a story for me. But my parents used to say, like, growing up, they would play Monopoly. I guess it was, like, a really big activity. But people would take it seriously. And, like, they would, like, flip the board or get angry if, like, things didn't go their way.
It can get very heated. And people like to invent rules.
Favorite pizza topping?
Pepperoni.
Best concert you've ever attended?
Well, the one I had the most fun at was at a Purdue called the Jake Isles Band. I don't know if your generation would even know the Jake Isles Band, but...
I do not, but I will look it up now. And that's one of the things I love about this show.
I enjoy Billy Joel. I enjoy those. But the Jake Isles was the most fun.
Jake Isles. I will look it up. So, well, Milo, thank you so much. That's all the time we have time for today. Is there anything you'd like to say? Closing words before we sign off here?
No, Eric, I just want to thank you for inviting me to be on this with you and to compliment you for these podcasts. If students are watching them, high school kids are watching them, young professionals are watching them, they're learning from them and they're an attract into our industry. So it's an investment in our industry and I thank you for that.
No, thank you, Milo. And I opened the show with my good friend. I really meant that. You've been a supporter, not just of me, but of my entire family. And we've known you for many, many years. And you've always been a positive influence and helpful in many ways. And again, that's as much as I can say that personally, which I can. I know I can say that on behalf of a lot of the industry and a lot of people that I consider good friends and, you know, colleagues and have worked with you or worked for you and really appreciated your leadership, your mentorship, your guidance, and just all positive. So thank you so much. And I appreciate those kind words as well. And that is one of the goals of the show is that, you know, maybe students out there are listening and learn about the industry in a way that isn't so obvious to them today, you know, about the things we do and about the projects we work on and how there's a place for everybody in our industry, right? It's not just, you know, you don't have to swing a hammer or you don't have to draw, you know, you don't have to be a CAD expert. There's room for everybody. It's just about being interested and being involved and wanting to build. So thank you for that, Milo. We'll include links to any resources we mentioned in today's show notes. And thanks again for listening and keep an eye out for the next episode, everyone.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.